I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. And today I am joined by none other than Dan Hatman of the Scouting Academy. Dan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. You know, if you have seen the RSP film rooms, then you've seen Dan on there. We've profiled Kenneth Dixon and Dante Fowler. And you see, and if you're on Twitter, you definitely see Dan and the Scouting Academy in their presence. And, you know, I'd like, Dan, if you could just share with everyone who may not be familiar with the Scouting Academy, what you do, your background a little bit, and how that influences what you do, and we'll go from there.
Fair enough. Really, the idea for the Academy stemmed from my anecdotal experience working in football and then talking to others, a shared experience in football of people getting opportunities to do the work before they were ready to, before they had all the tools that they would need. And I looked at basically, you know, all the other industries out there not related to football, or I guess sports in general. And there's usually a developmental path. It could be through standardized education. It could be through apprenticeship or something, but you get in and you learn the job in some way, and then you go out and you start applying it and work to grow from there. And in football, it was more of you'd get in occasionally. Those who are experienced in it and could teach you would have the time to, but more often than not, they're scrambling to just try to cover the immense workload that is this business. And so you were left to kind of learn through osmosis, through observation. And certainly some found success in that, and I wish them the best, but I didn't think that was best practice necessarily, that, you know, the majority of the learning would be through observation only. I thought some of my better educational experiences came from feedback loops and being tested and then provided feedback and shown where I lived up, where I did not, so forth and so on. And I really wanted to try to provide that back. So 4 years ago, I got together with former NFL GM Jerry Angelo, personnel director in Lewis Riddick. At that time, we had former head coach Wade Phillips. And since then, have added guys like Mike Martz and John Peterson and Chris Palmer and so many others. I think we're up to 18 different instructors now. I really just wanted to find guys that knew more about football than I did and put them in the position to share what they'd learned. Most of them have spent 30, 40 years in the game. What have you learned about this game and in the fundamentals of evaluation from the standpoint of, if we're going to grade a wide receiver, I don't care if it's high school, college, any professional league, you're going to assess things like release. You're going to assess things like route runnings, you know, how a guy gets open. Do they catch the ball? What do they do afterwards? So to me, those are fundamentals. If you're going to assess them at every single level, now how much you like them, how much you value them, as we've all often talked about, is a variable, but the pure assessment of them isn't. Every level does it. So why can't we teach that? Why can't we teach that before someone has to go do it for real? And that became the Academy, is showing guys those building blocks, how to assess them, how to communicate them, which is critical. You know, we find so often a person gets taught that their opinion's the only thing that matters, you know, form an opinion, which is great. And if you're the final decision maker, your opinion's all that matters. You know, have your opinion, maybe explain it to people, maybe not, just use it to make decisions. But if you're not the final decision maker, if you're looking to get in with a team and you're looking to report to a GM or a head coach who, and they're making the final decision, then at some point we have to get what's in your head out and shared with them in a manner that's actionable. Can they take it and leverage it and make decisions? So getting away from things like, yeah, he does a decent job getting open. Well, that doesn't mean anything for a decision maker. I can't make a decision right on that. Wes Welker does a decent job getting open. So does Julio Jones, but they don't get open the same way. So your grade may be appropriate, but if your communication doesn't support that and allow somebody else to make decisions, they're ultimately going to set your work aside. And then they have to either go do it themselves or find somebody else that can actually help them. And so many times it's not necessarily just helping someone learn the nuances of the game and evaluation, but how to then take what's in your head and communicate it in an efficient manner.
And that's great. It's a great explanation of it. And it's interesting because getting a chance to see some of the work that you do over the years and some of the people that have been involved with the Scouting Academy or have taken the courses, and you know, you have a detailed curriculum, and I've seen some scouting courses in the past, and they're usually more like seminars that are fairly expensive and fairly short. And what you do is you have a complete curriculum. You know, there's homework involved, there's assignments and projects involved, there's a networking component that, you know, that you've been able to establish. And that's been a very successful part, obviously, by not only the, you know, the fact that you've had numerous people be able to land jobs as NFL scouts, and they were graduates of your program, but you also have been able to get the Jerry Angelos and the Mike Martz and the Chris Palmers and the Lewis Riddicks and people with that level of experience to be a part of that curriculum. So, you know, it's obviously, you know, this year, if you're on Twitter, you follow Dan, you've seen that he's had, you know, multiple people who have landed jobs during this NFL hiring cycle. And, you know, obviously that's great news for you and for the Academy. What are some of the things that you've learned as you've built this network about, you know, what the NFL's looking for and what they need, or things that you discovered that were insights that have been helpful for you to, you know, help others who are trying to get into this career?
Well, I'll tackle that one in two parts. The piece on what the teams seem to be looking at is in trying to help our guys put together strategy for how to get in front of an NFL decision maker. I always make the comment to them, there's two parts to getting a job in football. One of which is you have to have the acumen to do the job. And then the second part is you got to convince the guy that can hire you, you have the acumen to do the job. So in trying to help them with the second part, I study how do teams hire? Who are they hiring? Where are they hiring from? And a couple of things stand out. One, it's an adage we've heard our whole lives. Someone in our family has told it to us since we were little. It's easier to get a job when you have a job. So going from the street or going from the internet to NFL teams is an unbelievably small percentage in an industry that only has a very, very small percentage chance of making it, because there's only 12 to 15 entry-level jobs a year. And, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of interested candidates. So it's tough to get in. And if you're not working for a team, it can be harder. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the prior teamwork is vastly superior from an educational standpoint, but a lot of times it's the lifestyle. Working in football often requires, you know, 16 plus hour days, being away from your family. You know, it takes a different approach than wanting to work nights and weekends on something that you find fun. Like, hey, I'm interested in watching this player. I'll sit down for as long as I want to and watch them and form an opinion. And now all of a sudden it's, hey, here's a whole bunch of guys you might not care about or not even like, but I want perfectly done reports on all of these guys in a very short period of time. You know, guys will watch maybe one or two players a week sometimes on the outside, depending on what your day-to-day is like. You know, there's times in the league where you're grading 15 guys a day to keep up with the nature of the workload. So how, you know, being exposed to that helps. So anyway, getting a job, it doesn't have to be a full-time job, even just volunteer. Like sometimes they just like to see that you've taken the shot and that somebody else values you. You know, you've gone and put yourself out there, and another team, another organization has said, huh, this guy's worthy of spending time with us. And then that kind of perks their ears up. Well, if they're interested in him, maybe I should pay attention. I think there's a kind of a psychological component to that. And then a couple other thing I've learned is that hard work and passion are mandatory. If those are the first two things that you can offer a team, you're not going to make it, in my opinion. Because everyone has to have those. It's not a selling point. It's a starting point. So you need to have other skills. And it can be football acumen. But if that's all you have, it better be at a really high level. You know, that's where I look at people that have added things to their tool belt. Maybe even just in communication or debate. You know, written or verbal communication. How to explain things that they're interested in. Have you taken classes in finance or economics? Have you taken classes in computer science or data analysis or kinesiology? Or do you have something else that allows you to be just be more than, I think is really helpful these days. And not that I like to deflate people's dreams, but I try to be as pragmatic as possible. I mean, the NFL means not for long. That usually means for everybody. So I advise people, like, work on degree paths and educational things that give you options in and out of the game.
Yeah, and that makes total sense. And it's funny that you mentioned that in that way, because, I mean, I've had some people in the past who've kind of come to me and usually say, well, how do I get into being a scout? And I'm like, I don't know, because I have no desire to be an NFL scout. And, you know, and I have never had that experience, I said. And I will usually say, okay, well, you know, some people that you can speak with, I would recommend, you know, I recommend you. I've also recommended, you know, some people that I know who are in within the league. And I would say, I know a couple of people who will be willing to talk with you. And I know what's coming, because when I do send them their way, you know, I say, so how did the conversation go? I said, well, they spent the first 30 minutes trying to convince me not to do it, and just telling me and giving me reasons why. And, you know, when I basically, and I listened to it, and they were good reasons and compelling reasons, but I'm not listening to them, on that end. But then after they realized that I wasn't going to listen to them on that end, they gave me a lot of helpful advice, you know? And so, you know, it's, I would definitely recommend to people. I mean, I know that some people can be, somewhat either critical or, skeptical about paying for a course of something of this sort. But if you're a football writer or want to be a football writer, or you're interested in this particular path, I think that what Dan's doing is tremendously helpful. And while, you know, there are some people who are in their early 20s who may look at the investment and say, you know, if they're skeptical and they really don't have any desire to do this, you know, they will see this as a larger investment for something that they feel like they could, you know, to quote the, you know, to who am I quoting here? But quoting like Goodwill Hunting and saying, I can get this at, you know, going to the local library and getting some late fees. It's not that easy. You would, you know, the amount of work and time that you would have to put into even approach the level of experience and knowledge that you would get from, you know, Dan's curriculum, I think. It, you know, you would be treading a lot of water to get there. And there are only, you know, there may be some special people who do that. And I have certainly seen some of them on the internet, and I respect that they do the level of work that they do and put into it. And they have the organizational skills and the time to do that as they're trying to make a transition from a career. Exactly. You know, I mean, you know, not everyone who's interested in doing something is a student who has to take a few classes a day or works at a job where they have the ability to use their internet to do something other than their work. And, you know, if you're starting a family or you're trying to, or even if you're not having a family, but you have a job and a career and you need to transition from one career to the next, I mean, anything that you're being taught, you could go to the library and learn that if you have the skills, the discipline and the, you know, to organize and the time. But in order to have this in a compressed way, I think this is very helpful. So on that note, you know, I would love, you were a scout for the Giants and for the Eagles. Dan, what have you learned about scouting football players since leaving the league? Because I know we've talked about that early on when we first met, that you had learned a fair bit outside the league than you did also compared to what you did inside the league. And that was surprising.
Yeah, this is a never stop learning endeavor, you know, for I think anybody involved. I'm constantly trying to find new ways of thinking, new modes, new tools, new whatever that's out there that can help. Because there are things, we mentioned that, you know, wide receiver hypothetical before. I mean, there's areas of the game that have not changed. I mean, we're still going to assess and evaluate those. But that's not the end of it. Right now, we have more information available on football players than we've ever had before. And so many times, it's trying to figure out what has signal, to use the data analysis term, what is actually pointing you in a positive direction versus just the noise that's out there. And so one of the areas that's been most intriguing to me is movement science and skill acquisition. And I know I've seen you on Twitter engage in these conversations a bunch. How, and we went and did our Kenneth Dixon breakdown. It was, we talked a lot about, you know, these kind of things from the standpoint of, yes, there's an assignment. And so now there's been a problem, you know, that they're asked to solve, and then they're given tools within the practice environment and the meeting room and what have you. And then it's about how do they put those onto the field and apply them, you know? And so, yes, we need to try to understand how many tools have been added to their belt properly in the previous thing. And is the assignment that they're being tasked to do, is it something that can be done? And assuming those two things check out, now it's about a player's ability to take in all the stimulus that's out there in the space and then apply themselves to that problem. And I know that sounds like a really crazy scientific way of talking about a guy playing football, but at the end of the day, we're trying to predict the future. I don't know how else to say it to people. I don't care if it's fantasy football or betting or just you want to coach or scout or what. No matter what's already been done is done. There's no that – it's locked in. It's set. So now we're taking from those experiences and we're trying to assess what's going to happen moving forward. So we're all pulling out our crystal ball and predicting the future. And so to me, the things that are really impactful is your ability to figure out why did that production occur. And then are those things repeatable? And usually if you're talking about something like college to pro in an entirely different context, meaning not the same city, not the same coaching staff, not the same potential verbiage and language, not the same pass protection systems, not the same, you know, defense and field position, not the same pressure externally from, you know, getting cut or whatever else the case may be, can this individual take what they have done and go forward, and will they be able to do it moving forward? So to talk about an example from the draft class this year, are the reasons that James Washington won the Biletnikoff and put up ridiculous production at Oklahoma State, are they all immediately predictive to an NFL offense? And is he able to immediately match that in the same ways? Or is he going to have to learn new skills in order to elevate himself and match that production?
Yeah. So what surprised you about working in this field outside of the league, and how has it changed the way you do things?
Well, when you're working for a team, everybody's attacking you, right? Every analyst, you take it almost personally, like they're out, you know, they just assume they can do their job better than you. They think you're an idiot. In fact, some of them just straight up call you an idiot. And so it's this constant attack from everybody on the outside, and you shelter yourself because there's just so many other things that never see the light of day. Never, ever, ever see the light of day in the public space that people make assumptions on as part of their analysis. And you're going, you just don't know. You don't know some of this stuff. Now, if you gave that information to the public, could they come to a logical conclusion? Absolutely. There are very, very smart people working outside of the NFL. But there's a big gap there. Part of it's created on purpose because not all of it needs to or should be publicly available. And then some of it, I would imagine, is more put up as a barrier to entry for people. But so that was tough, you know, and you just, you find some people that you respect because they're able to push forward thought process without being a dick, for lack of a better term. You know, I still find that in this space that some people really get their jollies off on just being mean. And I just, it's not who I am. I don't respond to it. I don't respect it. You could be Albert Einstein, Bill Walsh level smart in football. If you're a dick, I'm out. I want nothing to do with you. I'm not going to help you. But there's people outside that are really smart, that are trying to attack real problems, that are trying to actually push the game forward, ask intelligent questions, look at intelligent processes. And maybe their processes are lacking certain bits of data that only teams have access to. I'm excited about that because then you can take and apply that and help all parties. I like to see the game move forward. And so they're absolutely people that are asking questions, and not all of it creates best practice, but it's asking questions. I think where people on the outside have identified something I wish teams would do more is self-scout, because the teams owners don't put enough money into scouting, in my opinion, from a sheer staffing standpoint, to create productive hours for their people. So I talked about grading 15 in a day. You would never in a million years set that up as ideal best practice. But it's what happens, because there's literally not enough time, usually due to there's not enough money, to cover the number of players that you want to cover to compete with 31 other teams who are all looking at thousands of players across this entire space, trying to figure out if any one of them is an improvement on your roster. And so what happens is, on the outside, you do these self-scoutings, you ask these questions, you explore, because it's not your career on the line. You explore these things and you look for accountability and you do this stuff. And I think it's really hard being on a team side, because you're just trying to get through. You're just trying to get the entire draft class stacked. You're just trying to get all the free agents put together. You're trying to look at all the practice squads. Do we scout Canada? Have we scouted the Arena League? Have we covered if there's international players? Have we paid attention to these new startup leagues that are going to come in the spring? Is there anybody there? You know, do we miss a kid at, you know, Minnesota Mankato named Adam Thielen that no one looked at? You know, are we covering every base to try to do this stuff? And I don't know if there's enough opportunity in their schedule to sit down and explore, have they worked to consistently find best practices for everything they do and enhance their process? Or are they just working? Everybody's got a process. Ever literally. I mean, you can't go from point A to point B usually without a process. So everyone has one. Doesn't mean they're any good. You know, have you assessed, is your process allowing for everybody to maximize results? And that's something that I do think is being done on the outside, and in a positive way. I think there's a lot of people trying to push the game forward from enhancing best practices.
So you've mentioned some misconceptions that fans have about scouting. But you know, even if you repeat what that answer is, what are some of the biggest misconceptions that you've noticed that fans have?
That film has every answer. If you're a fan that relies on media analysis to decide if your team's doing a good job, you're like everybody else. It's why we've had beat writers since they've had newspapers, right? You're relying on someone else. They're looking under the hood, checking to see if it's any good, and they're reporting back to you so that you can enjoy the game on Sunday. That's fine. I think my guess is where your question goes on those that have looked to educate themselves and have a different type of discourse about it and come up with some of their own conclusions on things. And again, as we just mentioned, some of them are doing excellent work that I'm very, very proud to help with, if at all possible. And then there's other times where I look at it and I go, that brought you to the end of the film analysis. And kudos to you for getting to that conclusion or that the end of that. But so many times, film will generate a good question as opposed to a good answer. And then if you don't have the ability to take those good questions to the entirety of the market of players and find appropriate answers to those, then you haven't reached the end of the analysis phase. And that's where a lot of the work differs, is because on the teams, the film is easier to get to on the teams than it is on the outside. And it's pretty easy to get to on the outside. I mean, how many players can you not watch? So everybody can watch the players. Everybody can look at what's on the film. You know, and again, how good you are at assessing what future outcomes are going to be based on past performance is certainly, I think, the variance in film analysis scouting. But then it becomes about figuring out who this person is. Because when a guy busts, it's usually not because everybody said he had elite athletic ability and then magically it wasn't the case. You know, it doesn't, that's usually not the reason a guy in the first couple of years busts, short of an injury, you know, a kind of freak injury. Almost always a lack of being able to become a true professional comes from the person not wanting to be a professional football player. They want to be a person playing professional football. And that's a line from Jerry Angelo. there's everybody that gets signs a contract is playing professional football. Not every one of them is a professional football player, a craftsman. The Antonio Browns are craftsmen of their position. It's beautiful to watch, but it's intricate and it's nuanced and it's not solely based on athletic ability. Do you need blue chip athletic ability to be an all-pro player? 100%. But not every blue chip athlete becomes an all-pro player. Well, why not? Okay, it's something in the skill development. It's something in skill acquisition and their ability to develop. And whether that's on really crappy coaching, it's possible. But a lot of these guys will get 2, 3, 4 different coaching staffs if they're a blue chip athlete. So somewhere in there, there's probably someone that's pretty decent at their job. So a lot of times it becomes on that person just not intrinsically being motivated to be a professional football player. And that to me is the biggest misconception. I come to similar conclusions. I had a player in this draft class I was raving about, really liked him. And then when I asked why he didn't go highly, the answer was he doesn't love football. I didn't know that from the film. In fact, the film seemed to send me the other direction. I would have guessed that he really liked football. Turns out, according to them, that's not what the reports were from the school. So that becomes hard because if you're stuck on the film and you're saying, hey, you know, clearly the film indicated that there was some, you know, he was a good player, I would have taken him higher. You say that with just the film as your resource. I don't know how we can say that when the people have other access to information that isn't publicly available.
That's has parallels to any type of job, because if you've ever interviewed anybody for a job before, and then seen how they work out, if you're not experienced asking the right questions or putting them through a process of evaluating what they do, you can miss whether or not they have an interest in developing their career and being, there's someone who does a job and there's someone who, like you said, there's players and there's athletes. And, you know, you have to be a certain level of athlete to be in the league. But, you know, if you don't become a player, you're just an athlete, you know, at that point, because it's a way of saying that you're raw. You know, you don't have those skill acquisitions. You're not a technician. You know, you're not a student of the game. You don't have a deep enough understanding of the concepts that you're facing and how to scout players that you're going to be facing and how to continue to refine and game plan and study. And so, I mean, I think that that's interesting. I mean, for me, it was one of the biggest misconceptions I know that I had early on was that players get coached up on a high level in technique and on how to prepare and how to study. And it seems like the more players I talk to and the more people I talk to inside the league, it was, if you're talking about the scheme that the team's running, yeah, that's exactly how that works. But if you're talking about, you know, what Antonio Brown learned, that's, you know, that's on his own with the help of veterans, with reaching out to other people outside the league who have experience. It's kind of like, I always use music analogies because that's what a lot of my background was heavily in, but I've always tell people it's like band practice. It's like, if you have ever gone to a music practice or sent your kid to a music practice and you watched the band rehearse, you know, for 10, 15 minutes, maybe a little more, sometimes they'll go through, you know, warm-ups, scales, long tones, how to play in tune, playing certain things in rhythm together as a group. And it just gets the fingers loose and the mind focused. And then the bulk of the time is spent rehearsing the piece that you're going to perform on the stage in front of people. And when you look at football practices, oftentimes you see some of the similar things. And it's not that though they're not going to learn those things in those 5, 10, 15, 20 minute increments of, you know, rotating every 5 minutes into something new. You know, they're going to have to stay after practice and work on that kind of thing for, you know, a focused period of time outside of that, you know, that little practice period. And that's what makes a great musician, you know, is that time in the woodshed playing long tones for an hour. you know, and just playing one note and listening to how it sounds and listening to how nuanced the shape and curve of that note is and how you can manipulate the shape and curve of that note and learning scales and all sorts of different patterns of keys that you know, that you have to, that you may have to play in. And that expands your ear and it expands your eye, your physical ability to play music as well as your conceptual ability. And that makes you a better player in addition to playing with other people and practicing and doing that stuff. And in the NFL or in any other sport, it has those parallels, you know, from that level, is that getting coached up is different than what people think.
Oh goodness. There's no doubt. And to expand on that just a little bit, I keep yelling as loud as I can, anybody that'll listen, when they go to do this next collective bargaining agreement, there's a mechanism where a player becomes vested. 4 years of accrued seasons, you become a vested veteran. That's when you can hit unrestricted free agency. You're a veteran player basically, right? I hope they split things in terms of these rules on coaching between vested and non-vested vets. I think anybody that's not a vested vet in the first 4 years, the developmental phase, can have free access to their coaching staff as much as they need. Because to restrict players' development, the only thing that betters is the veteran players, who then don't have to compete as strongly with up-and-comers because they don't have that much, their game isn't being developed on that level. But it's bad for the game. It's terrible for the game of football. And if that's where, you know, the owners want to see an enhancement, I think it's really, really low hanging fruit to fix some of this stuff, to get out of, yeah, we only have 5 minutes of pre-practice and 10 minutes of indie on this stuff, and move to where, like, we can get a guy working on setting for an hour. And, you know, if they want to fix pass sets, let's work on that. Well, that means that we got to allow those guys to spend time with those coaches. So anyway, hoping if anybody's out there, if any owners are listening, Please split it up on non-vested vets getting access to their coaches, please.
No, that's a great suggestion. Speaking of, you know, player personnel departments, you've kind of alluded to a little bit. Is there one in the league that intrigues you just based on the work that they're doing or the people on the staff or just results that you're observing and combining that with your experience?
The Minnesota Vikings, the work that they've put in combination between draft work and free agent work to look at all methods to add to the roster. Spielman, his assistant GM, George Payton, their director of college scouting, Jamal Stevenson, and Ryan Monins in the pro department, you know, kudos to those guys. Cause if you look around their roster, I don't believe I've seen, and again, this is a bit anecdotal, but other than those years where Cincinnati was grabbing every former first-round pick that was available on defense, I don't remember seeing a unit that had that many successful hit after hit after hit after hit first-round picks like the Minnesota Vikings defense. When you look at those guys, the hit rate in the first round is not nearly as high as Minnesota's hit rate in the first round. And that's where the bulk of your time and investment goes into getting that right. Obviously, the work on trying to get that right allows you usually to get your first day or two better. But, you know, they've got picks littered all across that. And in addition to that, their fines on guys like Thielens and taking a shot on someone like Diggs in the fifth round, who didn't have great reviews on just being an adult, basically. I don't remember hearing that he was a bad person, just immature, I think might have led to some of his slide. But helping that young man develop, finding Adam Thielen, being willing to not force Treadwell. You know, a lot of times you get, you know, I spent a first round pick on him, he's got to be the guy. You know, they've been willing to say, like, you know, don't worry about it, let the best players play. I mean, their team's not perfect, but Jesus, that's a competitive team. Adding guys like Tom Johnson, who was a really good piece from them last year. You know, I think they upgraded with Sheldon Richardson, but still, you know, just the work that they did top to bottom, I'm very impressed with how Minnesota's doing things. And then behind the scenes, I've known for a few years some of their work on non-film things and some of the data and some of the body typing and athletic stuff. Prior to Scott Kuhn being moved from pro scout to director of analytics, you know, they've been working on this stuff prior to that move. And so they, you know, they seem to be very open to finding out what's next for them.
Yeah. And I think that that's one of those things that, you know, I've certainly heard that they're kind of, been on the trail of, you know, position-based formulas with workout numbers for a while, you know, and they've realized that there's no real objective measure, you know, entering the NFL for that. And so, you know, that's something that they're trying to find some metrics for positions that I think are, you know, maybe very difficult to do in terms of how you would look for, you know, data that isn't muddy, you know, so, but it's going to be interesting what they're looking at here and what they're going to arrive at over time. You know, are they going to, when it comes down to it, they may look at that and say, okay, well, you know, we're going to look at trait-based scoring, but how to use it is going to be the key, I think. So, it's definitely going to be an interesting development with where the Vikings and all teams are going to go, you know, in that direction and what they find. You know, also you've mentioned a lot about wide receivers just as examples throughout the show. So, you know, we talked a little bit about wide receiver development before this draft and just on a phone over the phone. And I would love for you to share with me some of the things that we talked about them maybe having more opportunities than ever to develop into technicians, but we've seen that they've seemed less prepared than what we might expect. And why do you think that is?
Yeah, that was a fun conversation. You got to try to keep up with where the game's going. Again, we're projecting forward. We can't project, you know, we're not projecting backward. That's just revisionist history at that point. So clearly the passing game has become king, and it's become king all the way down to lower levels. And you look at the opportunities some of these young men have in the 7-on-7 camps through their high school ball, obviously through college ball. There was a time when, because we were so run heavy as a game, by the time a receiver came to the pros, I mean, there really was a big learning curve on all of a sudden how to go execute in a pass offense, because that hadn't necessarily been part of their exposure. Now it's the inverse. More often than not, players, and this happens in the trenches as well as outside, are so well versed on the pass stuff that they have to come and learn how to do the run stuff when they get to the NFL. And so it would stand to reason that they're having more and more and more reps, more opportunities to run routes, more opportunities to catch the ball, more opportunities to diagnose coverage and learn how to get open and become polished and technicians in that. And I was intrigued why we had in this particular draft class so many players that clearly had raw athletic traits, but raw being the key word, and were not technicians of their position. And I'm not sure I have an answer right now as to why that is. I think that it comes back to what we were talking about. We were talking about misconceptions. We were talking about just coaching and development. I try to, as we break down players, we break them down in different traits, right? Different things that they do. Well, let's do that with coaches. You know, you have coaches that can teach techniques and build fundamentals. And then you have coaches that can teach scheme. And then you have coaches that can game plan. And then you have coaches that can do in-game adjustments. And then you have coaches that can help the trains run on time, or maybe be the disciplinarian or a motivator or whatever else. And then sometimes you find guys that have lots of those things. And sometimes you find guys that are specialists in those. And I'm wondering if is you watch the coaching pipeline, getting to be an offensive coordinator, which oftentimes leads you to a head coach, comes from being a quarterback coach. So we got to be the quarterback coach, the quarterback coach, the quarterback coach. And then the offensive line coach, that's a whole different track. And those guys, you know, they have their cool clinics and the mushrooms in the closet and the dark spaces and everything else that they joke about. And then a lot of the skill player coaching positions, even at colleges, are like master recruiters. They are, and I'm not saying this is universal, obviously you can't place those kind of universals, but in many cases, those guys are really, really good recruiters. And so, you know, I look at a Josh Gattis who is at Penn State, who just moved over to Alabama, and the number of receivers that were polished technicians coming out of Penn State – under Gattis there, and I'm excited about, you know, what he's going to bring to Alabama. I think we need to spend time tracking who those coaches are who have objectively trained technicians versus those who objectively have not, and leverage that in our process of upside in development. You know, I love Harry Heaston, who's the offensive line coach at Notre Dame, just put another two big-time technicians, polished players in the league after doing that with Ronnie Stanley and others. I think those guys are going to be very competent professionals. I wonder how much is left from a technical development for them, whereas someone else might have that. And I think that needs to play into how we look at some of these things, because developmental curves vary. You know, it's not like he'll get in, then he'll magically rise like four levels better because he'll get different coaching. You know, some of these guys are getting really high level coaching early on. Some of these guys are not. And I think that, like I said, I don't know if I had the answer, but there's something in that mix because they have more opportunity.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track there. And I don't like I know any better, but it's a. But, you know, just hearing from other people, I mean, just an example, even from years ago, talking to my buddy Ryan Riddle, who used to play at Cal and a frequent guest of the RSP film rooms, you know, who was a defensive end at Cal, broke their single season sack record and still holds it, and played with Aaron Rodgers and Marshawn Lynch and a variety of guys we know who are in the league. And he was, you know, as their leading pass rusher, he had a defensive line coach who, you know, was not a defensive lineman, basically got that job, you know, and had some, you know, obviously had basic knowledge about the position, and even more than some basic knowledge. But what was interesting for Ryan is his strengths were being creative and using certain types of moves that maybe weren't always recommended by the book, but they were things that you would see in the NFL. And they were some things that he did really well, and they weren't inefficient. They weren't things that were going to take him out of position, but the coach, you know, lacking that kind of well-rounded experience at the position and perspective and being rather new at it, you know, maybe he got in again for reasons like you mentioned. Maybe he got the trains running on time. Maybe he understood scheme. Maybe he understood, but when it came to the intricacies of technique, you know, Ryan said it took him a while to work with that coach and manage upward and say, to finally get the coach to at least relent and say, okay, Riddle, go ahead and do it this way if you really believe this is going to work. But man, if it does not work, you're doing it my way for the rest of the time. You know, but it, you know, and it's one of those things that he said, you know, he played with coaches that some were more open to, you know, letting the players be the players that they were recruited to be, you know, and that got them there. And then others were kind of more like, this is our system, and this is my system of how I want to see you be, and we're going to try and plug you into that. So I can see how maybe that affects all positions on a certain level. You know, you brought up Antonio Brown, you brought up Ronnie Stanley, you know, just as examples of some players who are, you know, technically sound or technically great. Who are some young NFL players who are in the first 3 to 4 years in the league that you're just following closely as, say, a combination of being a fan and someone who watches the game and has studied them maybe, and you're just intrigued with their trajectory?
Well, one of them will be a guy we studied together, and that's Kenneth Dixon. And whether or not his health and opportunity to actually play on a consistent basis will allow him to be the player, you know, I think you and I both thought he could be coming out. Another one is Robert Kimdichie. And this was a guy that I struggled with pre-draft. I'm risk averse. I admit that. You know, I tell people you got to know your biases. So I'm risk averse, and he was one of those guys that scared the piss out of me, because you could see the athletic traits are easy to identify. I mean, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to find that stuff, but his ability to consistently apply technique was just not there.
It was awful comparatively.
Yeah. He was 100% a projection to, we need a defensive coordinator, defensive line coach who will fix him, and turn him into what he should be, not what he is. And so I'm interested to see his development continue. And then another one injury stopped short last year was Forrest Lamp, the young man who's now playing for the Chargers. Yeah. And he was one of these, you know, my soapbox guy this year was Isaiah Wynn, the left tackle from Georgia. And then prior to that, it's been Cody Whitehair and Forrest Lamp and these guys right now in the league that is so desperate to find tackles across the league. But we're still playing to an old prototype of what a tackle has to be, despite players showing and proving objectively they're functional at this. I'm just not sure we're giving guys enough chance to play outside before we kick them in that don't have the measurables from a height and arm length that would have been a standard and an ideal. I'm just getting more open to the ideals limiting our talent pool in such a way, and we're having bad outcomes. Maybe we need to think about changing our talent pool and what we're doing with that. And so I know he's ended up playing inside at guard. I'm just hopeful he can come back and play because that young man was putting together some really good football beforehand. And so those are a couple of guys, and I'm sure there's dozens more that excite me, but those are a couple guys that come to mind.
Yeah, and there's it's funny, I'll mention a few before we end the show. And I think for me, there's D.D. Westbrook out of Jacksonville, who I think is, it was interesting to watch him come back onto the field after injury and Blake Bortles target him repeatedly on third down situations, one-on-one against some experienced corners. And I thought, even though he didn't always come down with the ball, he fared well, pretty well in some of those situations in a way that I'm interested to see how he develops. Laquon Treadwell is a player you mentioned. I mean, I'm interested to see how he'll fit in, how he continues to develop over the course of time. And then one who I just wonder if it's more about off field and as opposed to whether it's off field or it's about teams just not recognizing where he could really fit. And he's only a second year player, but it's Bucky Hodges, the tight end, wide receiver, move tight end, whatever you want to call him, the athlete who can catch out of Virginia Tech. Now he's with the Jets and he had a major concussion after, with the Vikings that put him, ended up getting cut, and then he ended up on the Carolina Panthers roster for a while. But, when I watched him on tape, again, as we talk about evaluation, watching him on tape, he was one of those guys that I thought was as good as any of the tight ends of last class, just catching the ball and facing one-on-one coverage on the outside. The biggest thing that was going to be interesting about him is his development as a blocker and an in-line player. And then also wondering, what else about him, as far as how his work ethic, whether he really wants to be an NFL professional, or is he someone who just happens to be a really good college football player who had NFL caliber athletic talent. So, those are guys that kind of come to mind for me. Dan, this was an absolute pleasure as always when you come on to do some work, with me, whether it's the RSP film room or this new endeavor here with the RSP podcast. So, thank you for joining me. You can find Dan Hatman on Twitter, at his address at Dan_Hatman. I would definitely recommend checking out the Scouting Academy if you want to learn more about the game. And, you can check out the RSP at the Matt Waldman, RSP.com. Subscribe to the podcast, which is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and TuneIn. And then also my site, www.mattwaldmanrsp.com, and the YouTube channel, RSP Film Room. Thanks again for listening.